At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. John Gibbons, do you know where I'd love to have been today? I'd love to have been in the room listening to Eamon Ryan, our climate minister, and Michael O'Leary of Ryanair, as they have their face-to-face, first time apparently they've met since Eamon Ryan became transport minister in 2020. What do you reckon went on?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. Yeah, I saw the footage earlier of Eamon stepping out of his electric car to head in to see Michael O'Leary. The thing that occurred to me about it is that I would have thought it would be more typical and traditional for the businessman to come visit the minister in the minister's office. Traditionally, that's how it's done. So I thought the optics were a tiny bit off, to tell you the truth. I think Eamon Ryan, I mean, fair play to him. He's reaching out to Michael O'Leary. I mean, a lot of people, given what Michael O'Leary said about him, might reach out to Michael O'Leary with an object in your hand. But a fair play to Ryan, fair play to him that he's taken it on the chin and he said, right, I've offered to meet this guy and to talk to him any number of times and finally he's accepted. So I guess he's decided that it's obviously too much trouble for Michael O'Leary to come into town, so he'll go out.
Hold on a second. Might it not be a good idea for Eamon Ryan to see the Ryanair complex out in Swords, if that's where they meant, or actually to go to Dublin Airport where they could actually talk about the numbers going through the place? Now, I mean, sure, Eamon Ryan hasn't been in the Ryanair headquarters. He's been in Dublin Airport loads of times because he's probably flown in and out more than most listeners over the last 4 years.
In the line of duty, I think that's entirely correct. I think he holidays at home, as I understand
it. He does.
On the West Coast, but when he's doing his government duty, he flies around, as do all the other ministers. So sure, yeah. As I say, I think it's a good idea that people talk. I don't think anybody can object to that. So, okay, great, they're talking. Should he be out in Michael O'Leary's office doing it? I suppose he's probably the person best qualified.
I suppose he can see just how big Ryanair is and get an appreciation. But I did notice last night, and the Business Post was reporting this morning, that Michael O'Leary and Ryanair put out a statement saying, hold on a second here, Eamon Ryan keeps telling us he can't interfere in the process, the planning process at Dublin Airport, but he was well able to interfere in the process for the LNG terminal down in Tarbert in County Kerry, where he told Bord Pleanála not to go ahead with it.
Yeah. We talked about this last week, Matt. Again, we can probably knock this one backwards and forwards about what constitutes an interference by a minister, what doesn't constitute an interference. The fact remains that the ball is at the feet of Fingal County Council in relation to this matter. And I think I made the very same point last week, that if Eamon Ryan intervened with Fingal County Council and told them to tell Michael O'Leary to get stuffed and to not have an expansion at the airport, they'd be howling blue murder, saying this is political interference. So in that case...
Sorry, Ryanair's argument is that there was political interference for the LNG plant.
Sure, but then I suppose we can probably go down through the list of everything that everybody's interfered with and say, well, you can't say this and you can't go there. And I'm not sure really where that gets us.
Okay, actually, this is slightly related to it. You wanted to talk about artificial intelligence, because I think I've brought it up with you previously that there have been suggestions that one of the ways to reduce emissions from aircraft is to ensure more efficient flight plans and earlier landings so that they burn less fuel. And the way to do this, apparently, is AI. If AI took over control, effectively, of all the flight plans, you could save 20% emissions. And yet, I believe you think that AI is not going to have the benefits for handling the climate crisis as many people are putting forward.
Okay, well, first of all, let's see who's putting it forward. So the big kind of pushers of the idea of AI as a climate solution at the moment is probably Google. They have an AI program, Matt, called Bard, right, which they've rebranded, I believe, as Gemini. And it's an enormous program. And obviously, that's the business they're in, pushing electrons around. That's what Google does. They're in the business of artificial intelligence. They're in the business of mass data management. So that is their business. So naturally, within that business, they're looking to say, yeah, our business is contributing in good ways rather than just in negative ways. Now, they released a report last year which they claimed that AI could reduce global carbon emissions by 10%, which is something similar, for example, to the entire emissions output of the European Union. Now, frankly, I'm always believed that when things sound too good to be true, they generally are too good to be true. They tend to require a whole bunch of things, you know, the absolute optimal outcome on absolutely every score. And in real world, Matt, these almost never happen. And we also, of course, as you and I have talked about many times in here, you also get these rebound effects. So you do X and Y comes bouncing back to hit you. And what we're finding, of course, with AI is that it's absolutely a double-edged sword. I think that's critical to say. So, for example, there's a group called Climate Action Against Disinformation. This is a coalition group, and what they found basically is that their argument is that AI involves a doubling of data centres and a huge increase in energy used to drive data centres. And the calculations on this are interesting. They reckon that, for example, I think it's something like there's an 80% increase in the amount of energy required to drive an AI query compared to a regular web query. So if you simply type into Google a particular query, then if you put the same query through ChatGPT or whatever else, it's vastly more energy intensive. And the reason, of course, is there's a huge amount more energy processing, computer power involved in that. So it's obviously in the interest of organizations like Google to basically say what we're doing is a solution. And that's fair enough. But I think within that, we also have to look at the consequences. And for example, we also know that Bitcoin is another one of these sort of technology heavy enterprises. And we see, for example, across America, coal plants that had actually been shut down being reopened in towns and cities in America to provide the additional energy for Bitcoin mining. And it really sounds like an end time situation where we're actually data mining by burning coal.
Yeah, so that's a worthless pursuit because there's no need for Bitcoin. But you can argue that an awful lot of the other things to which artificial intelligence are applied are of enormous good. Now, not your ChatGPT searches or whatever and stuff like that, but there's an enormous amount of scientific advances, for example, which have been powered by the data generation of AI, and that could be incredibly useful to mankind and indeed to climate change.
I think that that is true. For example, the Google applications, they claim that they can help to track deforestation, that they can better identify pollution. For example, there's types of fugitive pollution like methane leaks from plants that can be more accurately tracked using AI, and of course extreme weather. So these are, if you like, on the plus side of the column, you can put those things and say, absolutely, if we're going to burn vast amounts of additional energy for AI, then these are probably really good places to burn it in. Now, unfortunately, the ledger, Matt, has an other side. The other side we're finding is an explosion in the use of AI to spread online disinformation. Now, we've seen this already in relation to politics and elections, but we're increasingly seeing it in relation to climate. And I know as a regular Twitter / X user, there's been a huge increase in recent times, very recent times. Since about 2022, it's reckoned there's been a 25-fold increase in what they're called climate skeptic tweets. They've suddenly exploded. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of accounts that I've never heard of popping up with something to say.
Or many of them retweeted by Elon Musk himself.
Absolutely. And the thing here, Matt, is that a lot of them are using a very similar sort of, for want of a better word, logic. And the suggestion is behind this is the hand of artificial intelligence. Now, I have to be honest, I certainly hope so, because there's not much sign of intelligence in the regular sense of the word in a lot of these tweets.
Okay, a couple of other things. I think, are we already heading for 2024 being the warmest year on record?
We don't know that for sure. At the moment, statistically, it's reckoned it's about a 1 chance in 4 of being the hottest year ever recorded. But it is a 99% chance of being one of the 5 hottest years ever recorded. But there's a couple of
reasons. Because February was an extremely warm month globally, wasn't it?
Incredibly warm. But there's a sequence here, Matt, that any gambler would give his right arm for. July 23 to February 24, that 9-month sequence, every single one of those months are the hottest months in recorded history for every single month. So we've gone right through the Northern Hemisphere summer, through the Northern Hemisphere winter, and the Southern Hemisphere summer and the Southern Hemisphere winter. And what we're seeing is more and more heat building up in the system. And as we've talked about here many, many times, this is playing out in all kinds of predictable ways, because it isn't just the temperatures we're talking about here relate to atmospheric temperatures. But we also know that the sea surface temperatures, this is down to 2 meters in deep in the oceans, are at the hottest levels that they've ever been recorded. Now, a little bit of this, by the way, has to do with the sort of the El Nino effect. There is a little element of that, but overall, basically, it's the burning and releasing of 45 to 50 billion tons of carbon CO2 gases into the atmosphere every year, and it's really pretty predictable. When we're doing that and we continue to do that, and these gases are long-term gases that are staying active, Matt, for years and decades, then it's pretty clear that if we continue on this pathway, we're really headed into a very, very difficult place.
And it'll come as a surprise to anyone who's been watching True Detective Night Country, but the Arctic apparently could see ice-free days in the coming years.
That's right. We're approaching this. It's reckoned now possibly we'll have the first ice-free month, which was typically September, possibly by the end of the 2020s. Now, essentially, an ice-free Arctic month involves a full shift in our climate system, because I suppose we've the two poles both covered in ice, and when one pole is clear of ice, essentially you're moving into a completely different climatic system, and that also requires or will affect the weather systems, Matt, in particular in the Northern Hemisphere.
John Gibbons, thank you for being with us. Listener Paul O'Coolock says, hope you're going to give Michael O'Leary the right to reply on the abuse from your contributor. Michael O'Leary is very welcome to come on the programme anytime he wants. I will make space for him, but he hasn't spoken to me since 2018. Apparently he didn't like the book that I wrote about him. There you go.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.